Welcome to Regulated and Relational, the bi-monthly podcast produced by the Attachment and Trauma Network. Today's episode is on grief, and joining Ginger and Julie in the studio is Emilio Parga, the executive director of The Solace Tree, a center based in Reno, Nevada, that focuses on grief and loss for children, teens, and families. Let's join their conversation.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Regulated and Relational, our podcast produced by the Attachment and Trauma Network. I'm Julie Beam.
And I'm Ginger Healy.
And we're very excited to share with you from both our personal experiences and professional knowledge what it truly means to be attachment-focused, trauma-informed, and how we can help children impacted by early childhood trauma. Today, we have a special guest, Emilio Parga. Welcome, Emilio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Emilio Parga, MA, is the founder and executive director of The Solace Tree, a grief and loss support center for children, teens, and adults in Reno, Nevada. He coordinates support groups at The Solace Tree and in schools in Nevada, providing on-site support to staff, families, and students who have experienced loss. Emilio collaborated to create the Good Grief Project, specifically for K-12 students who have experienced loss, and has been consulted to work alongside first responders during traumatic events. Additionally, he teaches courses on death and dying and helping children and teens cope with death and all loss. Emilio, I had been thinking for many weeks regarding the topic of grief and that it was an important one for our listeners, for anyone who is a human, because grief impacts everyone. And for those of us, especially in this field, we started off, ATN started off as a group of parents whose children had been impacted by trauma. And so for us, grief is just this ongoing theme. There can be so much loss seen and unseen in trauma and in that primal wound of adoption, because adoption is born of loss. In fact, one of our good friends from ATN, Karen Buckwalter, she's a therapist. She wrote an article once that stated that for one parent to adopt a child, another has lost a child, and a child has lost their birth family. And they may also have lost culture, people around that look like them, birth family medical history, baby pictures, childhood memories, birth order, birth family faith tradition, foods, cultural activities, just things that they may have been accustomed to. And that is a lot of loss. And that's just that, you know, one topic. So, Emilio, when I was putting this podcast together, I was thinking about adoption losses. But then, of course, I was thinking about other loss. Just recently, I lost a very dear friend to cancer. And then shortly after, a close friend of mine lost her daughter very tragically. And those situations this past few months have just left me feeling very overwhelmed with this topic. And I just wanted to do this topic right. I wanted to do it with care. I wanted to honor these losses and really talk about grief in a way where we and our listeners could walk away feeling hopeful and with ideas and hope about how to move through our own grief and how to help others with their grief. I just wanted to equip us all in ways that will help us in this life journey where we, yes, will experience grief, but we will also experience joy and just so many feelings. And so having said all that, I guess I just sat back one day and thought, I need help in discussing this topic. And your name just came to mind. You've been a speaker with ATN, and you're obviously an expert in this area. So I went, oh my gosh, who better to help us with this topic than Emilio? So thank you for coming. And considering everything that I just laid out there, and also considering what you yourself want our listeners to know, where do you want to start? Where should we begin?
Well, thank you for having me on your show. Thank you for thinking of me and the work that we've done. Everything I'm about to talk about is lessons learned from thousands and thousands of children, teens, and adults, not only just in the state of Nevada, but several states, and then also, you know, national school shootings and mass shootings, the fires in California. But I want to say Thank you for sharing all that information about you personally. I let people know when someone shares that they've had a loss in their life, instead of using the word sorry, we have to acknowledge and we have to let them know that thank you for sharing and sad to hear of your loss, instead of I'm so sorry, Ginger, because that goes nowhere. And we really want to have this conversation go further. I talk about how just you sharing that, when someone shares that, it's you feel safe, you have to get it off your chest. And it's a privilege for Julie and I just to be here and listen to that, whether Julie knows that again, or the viewers, they know that of you listening, you're saying it again, and you're just letting everybody know this is where you are in the moment and working with and death and dying. We live in these moments because yesterday, we don't even get that back and we're not owed tomorrow. So we're just living in this moment. So anytime someone shares anything that's personal, we just have to really be mindful, be sensitive, be present, but also know that it takes courage even as an adult, but also be privileged. So I just want to say first and foremost, as far as some of the tools working with other adults, thank you for sharing that. And I am sad for your loss. And I know that when people share their losses, something has shaped who they are today and who they're becoming because of these losses and these deaths. And you'll hear me say death because everything else is secondary. That's why when we're in the schools, it's called the Good Grief Club. They share all their losses, but they also have deaths. And then they have multiple losses and multiple deaths, and they all just come up. But I think what's changed over the years after we started this after 9/11 is language, communication, and how we respect people when they're getting ready to share that, because we never know where someone is. And I'm always so reminded of Robin Williams before he died. This was his famous quote, and I use it everywhere I go. One of the first things I say is, because he said, everyone's battling something you know nothing about. Be kind always. And we're all battling something. So Ginger, you shared all this loss and deaths just now, you know, recent and in the past, but you're still grieving it. There is no magic ending to grief. There's anniversaries, there's birthdays. I do a workshop called Seasons of Grief. We grieve in seasons, but also we have moments. We could be on this podcast and we could be somewhere talking to a friend or listening to a friend or having dinner, but all of a sudden we have this grief burst. And it just overwhelms us with feeling, and it's a memory, and it's food, and it's music, and the birthday's coming up, the anniversary's coming up, and not everybody who dies is loved. So there's so many things going on as we go through our grief process, not the stages, but the grief process, you know, through the seasons, through the days, through the holidays, through the weeks, through the days, et cetera. So I just want to say it's huge that we just pay attention to these moments, how we learn so much. Because it's genuine listening. It's just not listening. It's not active listening. But it's more just listening and listening some more. You can learn so much from these children, teens, and adults when they actually share their grief and trauma.
I love that. And I love that you gave an example of what to say other than I'm sorry, which is like the standard response, right?
And I tell my university students, and I'm not picking on any med students, but especially future doctors. And I just say, you know, language has changed since 2000. And I mean, 9/11 changed a lot of things, but we've learned with social media and our phones in our face. I didn't know that many people knew Betty White. And when Betty White died years ago, like people were so upset and they couldn't believe she died. And I'm thinking, you're 18. Like, how did you know Betty White? Like, are you that sad? But it's in our face now. So we can talk about it. And I love that these students were talking about it. A lot of the things I talk about are lessons learned. They're suggestions. I've written books before with kids and on my own. And if I was a doctor, I'd still say the same thing. We need to offer suggestions. We all have opinions. We all have our own grief stuff. We all have our, I don't call it baggage. We call it a grief case. We all carry this grief case of just past losses, and we have to work them out because it ruins relationships and school and money and jobs and all those other things. But if we carry this stuff around in our backpack or in our briefcase and we work on it, things seem to be, you know, a little better because it's work in progress. We're not trying to fix anyone. Like at our organization, we're not trying to fix anyone. So when I talk to the med students, when I do trainings, and when I talk to students at undergrad and grad at the University of Nevada, Reno, I say, these are some suggestions. We're going to role play because we have to get it right. I read an article about the FBI reporting that we are on a record for mass shootings this year. It's unprocessed grief is what I'm not calling it that, but that's what it feels like. But I'm not calling it unresolved grief. I'm saying, wow, it's unprocessed. These people have all the stuff going on in their life, and then they want to, you know, hurt society. And it's just because nothing's been worked on. They have things, maybe no one listened to them. So I say, when we role play so we can get it right, instead of using the word sorry, because I have the classroom, just say, when your dog died, when your mom died, your friend died, let's take out the word sorry and let's say, I'm so saddened that your mom died. What was her name? Are you guys having a funeral? And then ask if you want, because they'll tell you or not. She died of cancer. She died in a car accident. Or she died by suicide. Mm-hmm. There's so many things we can learn from someone just because we were available and we actually said, hey, that saddened me that your uncle died. I know he had cancer for 4 years. He was struggling and he died. And I know you guys were very close. And I just want to let you know I'm thinking of you. Here's how we carry that further. I want you to know I live down the street and we work together, but I just want you to know that I'm available. I'm thinking of you. And I'd like to run errands for you and get dinner for you. And I know trash is on Wednesday. And I know you guys are going to set up the funeral on Wednesday. I'd love to just let you know, I'm going to go in the backyard and take out your trash. You know, because we're becoming doers. We can't just say this anymore. Oh my gosh, Ginger, if you need me, I am so sorry. But Ginger, yeah, if you need me, call me. You know, I'm available. So we do this role playing with students who are going to be future nurses, social workers, counselors, psychologists, and doctors to actually role play this as a suggestion. Then I tell people, call me, email me, text me. I'm very accessible. When you've actually used it. And I love when students say, half the time students will say, oh my gosh, I used it. It was weird. The whole dynamic, they looked at me like, huh? Like, because everyone's saying, oh, I'm so sorry, Ginger. And then it just stops.
Yeah, stops right there. There's no
place for conversation. It kills that back and forth, right?
So presence has changed. Communication has changed. But also, we're seeing so much death in people's lives. We have to be mindful and sensitive to the people that we work with, people in our own family, friends, people maybe that when we go buy coffee or we go buy lunch, when there's something wrong with them, and you can just kind of tell, we're just checking in. We have our young children try and give one compliment a day. And as they get older, 3 compliments a day up in high school. We let these children know in our grief groups that we never know where that student is when they're just walking by or they're sitting by themselves at lunch or in the playground. Mm-hmm. Just check in, say hi. And it's working very well because you want to go play. No, I don't feel like it. Hey, by the way, I like your Nikes or I like your sweatshirt. And even if they say, because we role play this in elementary school, why I like my sweatshirt? Oh, because it has bears all over it. It's just really cool. And I love the color blue. So we're asking these kids to give one compliment a day. And it changes things. It just changes things. We never know where someone is. We never know what they're battling. Mm-hmm. So we're just communicating. We're being present. We're listening. I want to share one thing with you all that I think would be important for this discussion. We started the Solo Street 20 years ago. We did support groups and then we had grief camps. Okay. And then kids were coming to our organization and I wrote all these things down for you. And I wanted you to know what's happening when we actually open this up, mm-hmm. The conversation, but also listening and giving kids permission to grieve. They were coming to the Solo Street and they were saying, I'm here because my name is, and I'm here is how they start their name, who died and how they died. And they get to share a picture of jewelry. They share cremations. They bring in their pets. I mean, 5-year-olds are bringing Led Zeppelin t-shirts in. But when we started the Good Grief Club in the elementary schools, it's kids dealing with all death and all loss. And here's what's come up in 10 years when we said, hey, we're going to play Uno today or do an activity. Please bring something in that you want to share. And here's some of the things that have come up in 10 years when kids have come into a grief and loss and trauma group. They've been harassed, eating disorders. They've been bullied, self-harm. They've run away. They've stolen, suicide threats. They've ditched school. They have risky behaviors, especially the older ones, drugs and alcohol. They're depressed, dating violence with some of the high school students. They have concern about an adult who's now dating their surviving adult. There's been abuse and neglect, and they have anger issues because nobody knows what they're going through. There's also foster care, deployment, separation, a house fire. Again, I talked about a child whose parent died, and now there's the surviving parent is dating. But I'll tell you one thing that we've learned. Those are all the topics that have come up in 10 years, 14 cases of incest. So here's what I'm saying about this. We're not just helping kids and supporting them by listening. We're not fixing anybody, but we're saving lives. Mm-hmm. We literally are saving lives when someone says, well, I'm not here to talk about the death of my father anymore. so-and-so, my step so-and-so, or my mom's new boyfriend, or my cousin, or my neighbor. And I mean, we're saving lives only because we've made trauma, grief, and loss comfortable to talk about. It's safe. It's 30 and 60 minutes. We bring in food. We play Uno. We build boxes. We have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of activities. They're not doing it at soccer or in computers or at lunchtime. It's the club that nobody wants to belong to. Mm-hmm. And we believe that these children, because we've been doing it for 21 years, who are 5 will become 10, who is 10 will become 20, et cetera. They won't have as much unprocessed grief. And I think it's so important that we have the safe haven, this place to talk. And actually, I didn't like the word solace tree when we started it. So we needed an acronym and it worked out great. So solace means comfort, the solace tree, but it's sadness overcome in a loving and caring environment. So we took that. We built this organization. We went to Lake Tahoe. We did grief camps, but we went into the schools and the schools love us coming in there because they get to talk about so much stuff that they normally wouldn't talk about. We're changing lives and we're saving lives.
And it all is boiling down to this, like you said, safe haven, this relationship, this creation of a space where we're talking about it. Because I know oftentimes people don't want to talk about death or grief or loss because it's so painful, or they don't know what to say, or they don't want to bring it up, when the truth is, it's already there. You know, not talking about it doesn't make it go away. It's already there, but talking about it is that acknowledgement and that I see you, you know, and I accept you in your grief, and I am safe to talk about it with. We have to get through it together, that we just don't heal in isolation.
And these kids are finding commonalities and normalcies, because we'll do a lot of nonverbal stuff. Let's start off with, has anybody ever lost anything, especially the preschoolers, a stuffed animal, a pencil, a blanket? Then we talk about death. How many have had a pet die? And so as they get older, they have this pre-trauma that was never worked on. Their parents got divorced. They were abused. Their parent was in a new relationship. There was an attachment piece where they got so close to the surviving parent's new boyfriend or girlfriend, and then they left, but also mom was abused. They were abused. And now they're in a relationship. They're in high school and they're just confused. They're sad. They miss their parent that died. There's so much going on. And I learned just from working with teens and young adults, actually young adults, because of their stuff, even in my classroom, some very bad stuff happened to them in high school that they're dealing with. They're calling it pre-trauma. It's a new word for me because we're calling it unprocessed grief and unaddressed grief. But when 18 to 24 year olds are starting to use that pre-trauma and they're working on it, now they're in my class and they're talking about death and dying, and they're going to be social workers and nurses and counselors and psychologists. They're able to take this experience and tools and projects that they've done. They write their own eulogy and obituary, and they get to pass it on to the next. But it's really, again, being comfortable, being uncomfortable, letting everyone know we can talk about this stuff. And I feel better now that we've been able to be able to talk about the things that are hard to talk about. And then you find that commonality, normalcy, not only in the classrooms in preschool, but at a college senior level class, which is just awesome because we're talking developmental stages. They'll go through those developmental stages and go through the next few as young adults, also as husbands and wives, being married, having children, being in the profession. You know, we do grief in the workplace, by the way. I don't talk about it much. We haven't done it as much, but before COVID and in 21, 22, we really started going into businesses and companies and started talking about the person who's no longer going to be there because they died. Just like when we go into preschool and elementary schools and talk about this empty desk, it's a full circle. And we get to commemorate, memorialize, but also have that conversation. Not everyone's going to be a part of it, and that's okay. But at least we're all aware, if I'm at your desk in school or at work and I'm just not feeling it today, I need to go home early because I'm missing John or Carol, you need to respect me and accept where I'm at. We just worked together. Our families did things together, and now he's no longer here. Mm-hmm. And now we need help in our job.
Yeah, because things are changed. Things have changed.
So Emilio, most of the folks that are listening to this podcast, I mean, we don't know a great deal about all of our listeners, but what we do know is that most of them are either young parents and caregivers or young educators, or in some instances, both. So what can they do to equip themselves to be better able to help the children in their care with grief and loss, and look for the right resources and for organizations such as yourself? Where do they start? What tools could you give them?
So, you know, that's a great question. It took us 6 years to get into the university to teach this class, the two classes, children, teens, and death. And it's really developmental stages when children are experiencing death. And then the death and dying piece, 0 to 100. The one thing that we looked at that really helps support what we do, there's a national organization called the National Alliance for Children's Grief. Mm-hmm. And they have on their Twitter and their Facebook and their Instagram, they have tools for teachers year round, you know, and counselors. That's a great start, because there's conferences, there's tools. We actually have now, it's going on 13 years. It's the Child and Teen Grief Awareness Day. It's always the Thursday before Thanksgiving, where we acknowledge that children grieve and teens grieve, and we wear blue that day. And there's lots of packets for teachers and counselors and psychologists and nurses to use with children in the hospital or in the school to start talking about the person who died or mm-hmm. is dying. And it's really having that conversation. It's tools, but it's also being present. It's also, as a teacher, if I can't help this child who really needs help, and the school counselors at the dentist, we need to go find another nurse or teacher in the building that's had this experience, doesn't have to understand, but has some similar stuff happen in her life, and doesn't really have to be trained, but also can sit with this child, because we're all so busy. But we should never underestimate a child's ability to grieve, think, feel, or just have a question. We need to be available all mm-hmm. the time. And that's what I always tell the teachers and counselors. We need to be available. This webpage, National Alliance for Children's Grief, has so many tools. It has books. It has cutouts. It has copying pages. It's a great tool, because if their city, whoever is listening, doesn't have a university class, or doesn't know about an in-service or a webcast mm-hmm. or a Zoom for training, they have these all set up. And there's just so many out there that are happening all the time from just different people like myself that run grief centers, of their written books that are very accessible. But I think the biggest thing is listening, being present, and trying to find resources in their community. You know, we have a grieving center in Reno, Nevada, and in New York after 9/11. But there's about 500 in the world. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of grief centers. There's only 500. The world is big. There's one in almost every city. And we have people coming at least a 5-hour drive just to be here, because there's nothing in rural Nevada. The mm-hmm. middle of Nevada, there's nothing. So they're coming because they need help, and they heard about it, and their pediatrician probably recommended or suggested it to them. So much these days, a lot of people, even my students, they have this unprocessed grief. They're carrying around this grief case. They never know when to share or talk about their loved one, the mm-hmm. death of a sibling, the death of a parent, grandparent, et cetera. We need to give them permission. There's grief camps all over the world for these kids as well, to go to a lake and do activities, but also play in the water and feel like this is okay. I don't use the word new normal. People don't want to hear that, but people are like, this is my new normal. This is what it's like not having my sister anymore or my dad anymore. Mm-hmm. But it's new things. And we've learned that even though a life has ended, the relationship will never end. And we must acknowledge, respect, and accept where people are and their cultures and their religions. Yeah. And we need to listen more. And we need to find those resources for them so they can help them get through it. Not a stage, but just a process. And that process is forever. It's not like, oh my gosh, it's been 10 years. I can start dating again, or I can have another child. Like, I forgot that one and that was painful, but here we go. This one's fine. I have that conversation. And I also want to say to the group that's listening, because we've learned it over the years, in your office, especially if it's a smaller office, or even in a school, or even in a hospital, everybody does like, and this is going to sound odd, but not in my world, because this is what we do, but everyone has like a birthday club, right, in their mm-hmm. office. But for some of the people, when they know that their death date of their sibling when they were younger, or their parent, we celebrate that as well. And it's not celebrate like with cake, like we would do on a birthday. But we want the staff to know, hey, Ginger, I know the date's coming up because you mentioned at the last staff meeting that you're going to be gone 4 days from Memorial Day weekend. But we just want you to know that we're thinking of you. And we got you some flowers. I mean, it goes a long way. A card goes a long way. Flowers, remembering when someone said, well, he actually died on Friday, the day before Memorial Day weekend. We should always go to the ocean or the lake or go hiking. We know it's so important to that person. We need to pay attention. And that's why I think with all these mass shootings and school shootings, somebody forgot something. Nobody listened to them. And that's what they're saying, that nobody cared. So now they're self-destructing and destructing towards others. We need to pay attention to the people in our family, the people that we work with, those little kids that are going to school that we have no idea what's going on in their school. Even when they come to the hospital room, like there's so much stuff there. Ask questions. Never be afraid to ask questions because either they're going to tell you or they're not. And I think it's so important when working with teaching, training, or sharing with, you know, professionals that want to be nurses, counselors, psychologists, our school teachers. And here's another thing I start with on every workshop and every time I start class, every single day I teach, it's the little things that are the big things. And I tell you, it goes a long way. The thank you cards that I'm thinking about you. I know the anniversary is coming up because you mentioned it, or it was in the back of the wall, or you shared with us and we haven't forgotten you. We know it's been 20 years for your father. I mean, it's the little things that are the big things. It goes a long way. And my students do not forget that.
What you're saying is that doing those little things, it's throwing like a relational lifeline to somebody who might be lost in their grief otherwise, you know, completely overwhelmed.
Absolutely. And I want to say this too, especially to the viewers, it's really important to think about it. We did the research from 2014 to 2018, mass shooters and school shooters. Every other mass shooter and every other school shooter had a death in their life. And in our field, that's unprocessed grief. The shooter at Parkland High School, the reason he did what he did was, and he even said it, because their social media and their suicide letters, all that stuff was public. The FBI stuff, it was every time someone does something, everything's public right now because they're still online. But he said he did what he did because when his grandmother, who raised him, died 2 years prior, he said nobody cared. He got teased. He got bullied. And you know what? He turned all this anger and everything else towards everyone else. And it was his grandmother, because someone did say, and it was in a report, dude, it was your grandmother. And it probably pissed him off. That's why we have to be careful. We have to be sensitive. We have to be present. We have to listen. We have to be helpful. It's the little things that are the big things.
Yeah. And I just don't think you can measure or judge any relationship or, you know, attack anyone for any relationship or feeling that they're carrying. You know, we're not walking in each other's shoes and understanding how we're feeling. And so just to see, I can see this is hard on you, you know, that's enough, you know, that it doesn't matter how much, that's irrelevant. It's that this is hard on you.
When I say the little things are the big things, even asking for permission for a hug, even saying, hey, Ginger, can I give you a hug? It's because we have to be careful, but also I can see right now you're having a really hard time, but I want you to know that I'm listening. Right. I appreciate you sharing me. What a privilege. I tell the students, this is how I do it. In my mind and under my breath, I go, wow, what a privilege. This first grader just told me that his brother died. Now an adult, Ginger, just shared with us. It's a privilege. Can I give you a hug, Ginger? It's just letting you know that we're listening, we care, and I appreciate you sharing. It's the little things that are the big things.
Yeah. And I love this term grief case because, you know, we've often said people carry around an invisible backpack. And this is another, you know, term for that, that we have no idea what people are carrying around, but we are all carrying around something.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, there's just no shame in being human. You know, that's not it at all. It's how can we, you know, help each other in this life.
So Emilio, do you find, you know, having worked in this field for a very long time, do you find that if I'm thinking in particular, because my daughter lost a family pet recently that she has had since she was in college and now she has elementary age children. So the pet has been with her a very long time. So we are doing a lot around the commemoration of this pet, primarily somewhat for her, obviously, but primarily for the children. Do you find that those kinds of things, if we experience losses and deaths that are, people I'm sure rank that as a minor death because of the death of a pet, right? If we do that with children at a younger age, is that then helpful for them in other grief situations to keep it from becoming a trauma, keep us in that pre-trauma stage, I guess. You know what I'm asking? Is it like we build in the muscle there for being able to handle your grief?
I love that question. I'm going to answer it based on what I've learned. If you remember, Ginger, I talk about children have this death bank, this loss bank. They don't forget things. And that's why I say, don't ever underestimate a child's ability to grieve, think, feel, love. They are everything. And as adults, we're models. So as parents continue to help explain or embrace from the pet that's died, even having a conversation when a raccoon or a deer has died on the side of the radio or a skunk, these are teachable moments. And this child, if we don't pay attention to the young child that had a death, they're going to have questions later on. They're going to want to know why. And I'll tell you, they're always thinking about it. They just know. So it's part of supporting their loss bank or death bank. Because it's already in their head. They know that someone died. We show it as adults. We show it in our demeanor, our face, our tears, our voice, the way we push things under the rug or don't talk about. So they know. They're very, very aware. So what we're doing is we're building. When I talk about grief case too, I talk about a child who's now 16 or an adult who's now 34 who had a pet die when they were 5 or 10, let's say, whether someone talked about it or not. It's in that grief case. Right? Mm-hmm. They've already worked on it, or they haven't worked on it. And now they're an adult and their dog died. So they were taught that, well, we're getting a new dog. 2 days later, it's like, wow, we just need to grieve this one. We are going to get a new dog. That depends on what the family wants to do. But let's still just grieve this dog first, or cat, or whatever the animal is. Mm-hmm. It's called stacking. When these kids have a loss and a death in their life, because there's death and there's loss, it's stacked. And that's how this grief case gets built. And so we have to help these kids with the stacking of all these losses and deaths to have these conversations be available and to work on it. Now, they're not going to understand the permanency until they're about 8 or 9. That's research. We know this because we've been in those age groups. But we still have to have those conversations with these kids. So later on, when they become 18, 30, 40, 60, they can also take what they've learned, right? And model for their own children. And if they don't have children, then their nieces or nephews, because we run into that as well, because this is what they were taught. Yeah, it's so important that we support these children at a very early age when there's been just a pet death. Because you ask anyone on this call, who's on this call, who's had a pet die or has a pet and they've never had that experience before, when that pet dies, there's going to be some grief, loss, maybe some trauma.
It's true. It's like I look back over my life of loss of pets and I grieved all of them in slightly different ways.
Yeah.
We ask kids about their first losses, their first deaths, like we do at the university. What was their first loss? What was their first death? And these kids, because they feel so safe, when they talk about a dog that ran away and they lost it, so they don't know if it's dead or alive, that's one thing. So we have kids say in primary grades, K-3, but really we're working with a lot of first and second graders right now. When they say, well, I accidentally opened the door and my dog ran out, got ran over by a car. Mm. You should see the kids in there. They're like, oh, they're so sad. And the child who is sharing it kind of gets teary-eyed, but not sure, but looks around the group. We're playing Uno, we're doing memory boxes, and they're just like sharing it, but they get to talk about it. And then I say this to all the kids when they share. By the way, the story you just shared, how many people know that story about the dog being run over? They go, oh, just my mom. And my cousin was outside too, but I don't talk about it. Second grade, they get to talk about it, you know? So now at second grade, when they're 12 and they talk about, well, my first death actually was I accidentally opened the door and the dog ran out, got hit by a car. Now they can talk about it like that instead of being like teary-eyed and then choking, not sure. They're like, now they get to share it because it's so natural, because grief is such a natural, normal part of life. So natural.
I mean, we could talk for so long about this. And
I knew this would happen.
I know it always does. And it's such an important topic, but I wanted to start to wrap us up. And I want to share something that my mom shared with me, because I had mentioned that for a few weeks now, this has been tumbling around in my brain. And I reached out to my mom because she has experienced some pretty tragic, heavy losses in her life. And so I wanted to talk to her about it. And so she wrote this out for me. I want to share it with you and then kind of get your ending thoughts as we wrap up here. But this is from my mom, Mary Rogers. And she says, my experience with grief, whether it is a divorce, loss of job, death of a loved one, or some other kind of loss, what grief is to me is deep sorrow, emotional suffering, and acute, unrelenting pain. There are no boundaries or limits to grief. You can be fine one minute and in a puddle on the floor the next. It requires bereavement, and no one can tell you how to grieve. It's a different path for everyone. You have to find out what works for you, and that's not easy. We don't prepare for loss. We don't expect it. We ignore it for a large part of our lives. At least I did. We hope it will never happen to us. And yet we know it will. Often the one you are grieving for is the one that would be your emotional support in tough times. That seems like a double whammy. When you lose something or someone that has been a huge part of your life, you have no idea how to walk that path. This is how I did it, or what not to do. I stopped eating. I had no desire for food. I wanted to be alone, and I didn't want to talk about it. But then it seemed wrong not to talk about it. I didn't want to hear about other experiences. I was confused. I couldn't make decisions. And yet so many decisions needed to be made. I got sick because my resistance was low and I wasn't taking care of myself. I dreaded holidays, family gatherings, and anything that seemed joyful. I had no idea what simple everyday things would be triggers, songs, food, etc. I consistently told everyone I was fine. That was my go-to response, and I wanted to sleep all the time. But I finally ended up at the doctor because everyone around me that loved me told me to go. The doctor told me that losing a spouse is as hard on a body as major surgery. And that's when I finally understood and allowed myself just to feel the way I was feeling. I accepted that I had to go through what I was going through. I stopped thinking and hoping that I could change things. I went back to a schedule that had worked for me before, so maybe it would work again now. My advice, find the people that let you be you and spend time with them. Find the ones you trust and lean on them. Allow yourself to not be okay for however long it takes.
That was beautiful. You know, we all grieve differently. So that came just from her heart, and that's how she felt. And I'm telling you that what she said, it comes out of a lot of adults' mouths.
Yeah.
And share a lot of that stuff. In a sense, a lot of us are like that in sharing what she shared. But she got to share that. And that's the greatest thing about.
I think that's exactly what I was thinking, was that power in her being able to voice that, whether it was for different for others or the same for others, right?
It's very similar for a lot. We've worked with about 10,000 adults. And I can tell you, there's no magic ending to grief. We all grieve differently. I want to say in my field, when I talk about the joy and the sorrow, that there is joy in the sorrow, because it's not like we're done grieving. The joy is, there's two magic words in the grieving world, and I'm going to share this really quickly. Two big buzzwords. Making meaning of my life now, making meaning of our family's life without this person here. And then continuing bonds. It's a religious piece. We don't touch religion until it comes up from actual family. But the joy and the sorrow is the memories. It's the talking. It's the sharing. It's also talking about how we're feeling right now. And is this okay? And it makes everything normal. It makes everything natural. This is what you're going through. And you know, it is true that broken heart syndrome is huge in older adults. It's a real thing. I don't know how low it gets, but I know from 70s, 80s, and 90s, it's a real thing in the older ages. But she gets to share that. And that's the greatest thing about having these groups, doing workshops, teaching at the university, being in the elementary school with the kindergarten kids, all the way to high school. They get to share things that nobody wants to talk about, share, and they get to find that normalcy and commonality. But they also get to know that, wow, if she's feeling that way, I'm feeling this way too. And by the way, I want to say a couple of things. So it just really helps people and where they are, that we're all grieving differently. That was so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today. And, you know, we could probably have you back 5 or 6 times and go deeper and deeper and deeper, because this topic is huge. I am going to make sure that the National Alliance for Children's Grief link is in the show notes, as well as a link to the work of the Solace Tree. We appreciate that. And we thank all of our listeners for tuning in today.
Thank you, Julie. And thank you, Ginger.
This has been another episode of Regulated and Relational. Next time, Julie and Ginger continue their summer series discussing emotions and the language of human experiences based on Brené Brown's Atlas of the Heart. The topic will be belonging. A special thanks to Lorraine Schneider, our editor, and Joe Kramer for donating our music. For more information about the Attachment and Trauma Network, visit our website at attachtrauma.org. Show notes and upcoming episodes will be available on our website and through anchor.fm. I'm Danny Pancratz. Thanks for listening.